We need now that.
I'm seeing spots. Thank you for that.
Ah, here we go. We're probably going to suck at getting this started.
We're recording.
Okay.
Welcome back to Talking Risk. This is a podcast about entrepreneurialism. Every episode, we bring on a business owner, a risk taker, a legacy builder, and we talk to them about the risks they took and the challenges that they faced, the problems that they've resolved in building their own legacy. We hope in doing this that we'll be able to not only just bring their experience, but bring some knowledge to both us and to you guys, and to try to encourage you to take your own risks, to build your own legacy, because that's what it's all about, right? Independence, right? That's how you gain independence in this world, is taking a risk. So my name's Eric Reese. I own Aspen Legal. I own LOZ Vacations. And now I own Simple Plan Foods, which you can find at yoursimpleplan.com, simpleplanfoods.com. You can find Aspen Legal at aspenlawteam.com. And my co-host is Ricky Hall.
Hi, I'm Ricky Hall, founder of Nutrition HQ. And you can check out my website if you're interested in franchising, nutritionhqfranchising.com.
And today, the best part of the show is Jamie Levine, who I've gotten to know over the last several weeks. She's in charge of franchise development for a company called Resting Rainbow. Jamie?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
All right. So today we're going to talk to Jamie about all things franchise development, but we're also going to talk about some unique risks that she's recently taken with a emerging, I don't like the word emerging franchise. As I told you, you know, years ago, I go to a convention and I go to an emerging franchise class, and I get in there and they define emerging franchises as anybody under 2,000 units. It's what? Like, holy shit, they done did emerged already. So we're going to say new franchise, and this is something that is very near and dear to my heart and Ricky's heart. And also Jamie's heart, in that we all are involved in a very new and actually emerging franchise. So we're going to get some great information about how Jamie goes about finding those individuals who are interested in independence, and how she goes about convincing them, for lack of a better term, that her opportunity, the opportunity that she represents, is the one that they really ought to take a risk with. So before we do that, we're going to talk about our hot topic of the day.
Hot topics.
My lovely wife, Jill. And our hot topic of the day is really the political landscape, not Biden and his idiocy, and not Mitch McConnell and his repeated strokes that he's having.
Is he stroking
on camera? Let's talk about Donald Trump. Okay, now I am a conservative. Ricky's a conservative. I believe Jamie to be a conservative. And if you've listened to our episodes before, this doesn't surprise you. I'm not a Donald Trump fan. I don't think he's a leader.
Eric is not a Donald Trump fan. I can vouch for those conversations.
Yeah. And so I think he's an idiot, quite frankly. He's a billionaire, but that doesn't make you smart, right? It just makes you rich. But these 98 or so charges, indictments against Donald Trump, this is really the hot topic. And the hot topic is, does this set a precedent now for future presidents? When Biden gets out of office, assuming he gets out of office actually walking as opposed to on a slab, which is my guess is how he gets out of office.
But
when he gets out of office, does a DA, and by the way, guys, think about the DAs that are prosecuting Donald Trump. These are not DAs at some state level. These are county DAs, right? These are just local people, right? St. Louis County has one. Every county has a district attorney, a prosecuting attorney. Is this the new landscape of politics? There is no question that Biden is a criminal. We know Donald Trump is a criminal. I believe that to be true. You don't press 98 different charges without believing that some of them will stick, yeah. Right? Because the dude's a multi-billionaire. We don't know how many billions he has, but he will sue you for malicious prosecution, all right? Yeah. So let's assume that these local DAs, that's all they are, have evidence that will back up the charges. But what about Biden? When he gets out, then, is a local DA, a conservative, then going to press charges against Biden? And it's a scary thing, right? It's a further retardation. I shouldn't use that word. It's not politically correct. But it is a further diminishing of the office of the President of the United States, as if it could be further diminished.
It's showing you how far we're willing to go to diminish our president.
Correct.
And who's going to come out of the woodwork that wants to go through this in the future?
Correct.
Which is even scarier.
Well, and I think that change has already occurred, right? So we get Donald Trump, a flim-flam reality TV guy, who, my God, he's actually the President of the United States. Then we get Biden, who has spent 50 years in politics and not achieved anything other than
corruption.
Corruption, right?
And built a fortune as a politician.
Oh, of course. I mean, all these
not by building businesses, by being a politician, he has accumulated a fortune.
Of course, all of these people are criminals based upon the SEC's insider trading rules have been violated by every politician. Right? They are using inside information which is not generally available to the market. Okay, that's what's called insider information, and they're trading on it. All right, it's not just Nancy Pelosi. It's Strokozoid, Mitch McConnell. It's Biden. It's Trump. It's all of these people. So they're all criminals. But the point that I'm trying to make is that if this is the new landscape,
right,
that you can't serve as president without being then questioned on a state level, I think we need a new law that says the dude cannot, or the dudette, okay, with Kamala Harris being the president, cannot be prosecuted on a local level. If you're going to prosecute,
it has to be on a federal level.
And so then the question becomes, why don't we have that already? Because this could never have been imagined. Ever.
No.
Ever. No. Right? No one ever imagined some schmuck in...
A schmuck in Atlanta. You're a schmuck.
In Atlanta, okay... Totally politically motivated asswipe, all right, prosecuting the President of the United States, all for the purpose of re-election
and recognition.
Of course.
And that's it.
Because other than that, she's $129,000 a year, right, with a county pension.
Right.
That's all she is, all right? And again, this isn't, every time I say this isn't political, people think, oh, well, Jesus Christ, it's about to be a political statement. It's not, okay? Because if they don't prosecute Biden after this, then something is truly wrong. They should. Right. They should go after it. Well, they did it with Trump. Well, guess what? That's a good enough reason. Yeah. Let's go after Biden for the bribery and for the blackmail that we know he committed.
Play rules by both with both sides.
Absolutely.
The same rules.
All right, so... Enough of that
nonsense.
All right, we're going to talk to Jamie. So, Jamie, the first question that I have for you is, let's talk about the current position that you have. Tell us about the franchise that you're working for.
Yeah, I'm on a really exciting new brand. When I met the owner the very first time, I was just, like, blown away. I was like, God, I was getting, offers from all different angles and different brands, but I was like, man, I really love this brand. It's called Resting Rainbow.
This is personal to the owner, I would think. This is a very personal thing to the owner.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Resting Rainbow, Pet Memorials, and Cremation. Yes, cremation.
Yeah.
I had a candidate just the other day say, this is taboo. I'm like, I don't know if it's taboo. It's just sad.
Yeah. I mean, if you put your animal through this, okay, I never was connected. This is strange, perhaps, but I was never connected to a dog or a kitty cat until Reggae, our basset hound, all right? And when she got sick, and when we took her in to get the shot, she had cancer, right? It was, I'm seriously getting choked up. It was one of the hardest days of my life.
It's heart-wrenching.
And I didn't think that this would impact me in this way. But let me tell you this, that the way that we were treated by the doctor who dealt with this made all the difference in the world, right? We were given time, and it was an awful day, an awful week. You're going to be the same way.
Oh, absolutely.
With your pup.
Yep.
So this is serious stuff, right? This is I'm not one of those whack jobs that say losing a pet is like losing a kid. It's not, okay?
Right. No.
'Cause I've been there too, right?
Yep.
But losing a pet is a big deal.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, more today than... Think about when we were... The three of us were children, right?
Yeah.
And we had animals. You know, the dogs stayed outside. And if they had to be put down, a 22 costs way less than going to the veterinarian, you know?
Yeah, I know.
$0.04 versus $250.
Exactly. It's a total different precedence.
But I don't
now.
Think... But I don't think that service even existed for pets back when we were kids.
Pet cremation?
No.
Probably not. I mean, I can't think of it. You know, you just dug a hole, right? And
right.
But now there's so many communities that can't do that. There's actually state laws that prevent you from burying animals in your yard.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. There's state and or local laws and stuff like that.
So the opportunity that you're selling has obviously a real appeal to the general public. Anybody who's experienced this, which is probably half the population, right?
What percentage of people have?
More than half.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's way more. 70% of households have pets in them.
Wow.
70%.
Right.
And that keeps going up year over year. That number
and that's
keeps going up.
Dogs, cats.
That's all animals.
Yeah.
And that's what's great. One of the other things about this brand, it's not just a dog and cat business,
sure,
which is what most of the pet franchises are.
Right.
It's all animals.
Right.
So, you know, people are cremating their ferrets. They're right. And they're cremating. Yeah, I know. Look at your face.
What about goldfish?
Iguanas. No, we put the goldfish. They just use a matchbox, flush it down the toilet. Sorry for all you goldfish owners out there. We appreciate you too. We understand. You love them too.
Discount for ferrets.
They do. That was like literally when I first joined on with Resting Rainbow. I was down there and we had a phone call come in for home euthanasia for their ferret. Their ferret wasn't doing well, and they were inquiring about home euthanasia because our franchisees will partner with veterinarians to offer home euthanasia.
Right.
So I was blown away. I was like, seriously, a ferret? But yes.
How do you know a ferret's not doing well? Because he goes, I don't feel very well. Sorry. That's my ferret voice.
I have a ferret story. My cousin had a ferret when we were kids, and we were staying over at their house, and my mom woke up in the morning, and she was in her little, you know, granny house coat thing, which I'll never wear no matter how old I get. And next thing you know, my cousin's ferret got loose, ran right up her house.
They'll do that.
And bit her in a not so nice area.
Yeah, you do that. It's time for you to be cremated. Well, the ferret's perfectly healthy. No, it's time for it to be cremated.
Oh, man.
All right, so, but back to a serious note. So this is a service that's well needed. we know in the pet industry, it's multi-billion dollar industry.
And it's inevitable.
Yeah.
Let's face it, it's inevitable. If you own a pet, that pet is going to die, unfortunately.
Right. So let's talk about this opportunity, and then I want to go back, right? I want to talk about where it all began and how you got into franchise development and franchise sales, if I can use that word, to begin with. But let's talk a little bit more about this opportunity. So this service, like, for example, when we, dealt with Reggae, right, the doctor sent the pup to someone else. They didn't do cremation there.
Yeah, very few. And actually, I don't want to say it because I'm not 100% sure I'm correct, but I don't believe they're even vets are even allowed to do cremation in their offices anymore.
I got you.
Because of EPA standards and stuff like that. But yes, they always outsource that.
So this opportunity is someone that provides this service, but really their clients are the doctors, right? The referral sources.
So, yes and no.
Okay.
So, currently, 75% of Resting Rainbow's revenues are coming from working with those veterinarians.
Sure.
But there's a huge opportunity to flip this to B2C because of obviously higher profit margins.
Okay.
And Resting Rainbow's has already done a fantastic job going from 75-25%. And the goal is to increase that. But what you have to do is increase marketing for business to consumer, because people just don't know.
Consumer awareness. Consumer awareness, you know? Because that's what I would think. I've got to go to my...
But wait a second. How does that work? I mean, do most of the pets... I mean, again, if I see my pet struggling, I mean, truly struggling.
Right,
Reggae was not eating and whatever. We knew it was time, right? But I wonder, do most owners... do they just let their pet die?
No,
I don't
absolutely
think so.
No. But it does happen, for sure. It does happen. Even one of I have a
or
ton.
A pet gets hit by a car or whatever. Yep.
I have a ton of animals, and I've never, out of all the dogs I've had from my adult life, only one has died naturally, and it was just actually last year.
Wow.
Where I was traveling, and my daughter came home. Yep, Zoe, she was a puggle, and my oldest daughter's dog, and she came home by herself after school and found her, which was so awful.
That's hard. Yeah.
And I was traveling.
Yeah.
It was not fun to deal with.
Sure.
But most people think that they have to go through the vet because they don't know otherwise.
Right.
So how Resting Rainbow is part of how they've created some of their B2C is just by having a huge online SEO and pay-per-click presence and stuff for the people whose pets pass in the middle of the night. And they can't call the vet. So they're Googling pet and Resting Rainbow's
what
coming
up. What do I do?
Up.
What do I do with this dog?
And they can call because they have 24/7 animal pickup.
Sure.
And so they can have somebody come show up to pick up their pet with dignity, professionalism, and empathy. And
that's important, really, with kiddos, for example, right? Your dog passes, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but you don't want your kids to wake up and see the dog
suffering or passed away.
Or dead in the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
So that service is important.
And it is. And Jamie, go through the process of that pickup. Like, it's just not going in and picking up a pet out of a bag. I mean, they have a whole process.
Yeah. Right. They do it with a gurney and a casket, which sounds weird to say casket for a pet, but they show up with a gurney. They go in with the casket on the gurney. They have really nice high-end blankets that they put the pet in the casket and allow the family to mourn and say goodbye. So
that's
it's
how we're going to get rid of Ricky eventually.
Yeah,
on a gurney at least.
Well, I'm gonna be cremated at Resting Rainbow. Well, I've already paid for it.
Oh, we're not using the casket.
I've already paid for my cloning also.
Yeah, we're not using the casket. We're going to use a blanket. Okay, and I can't say it's a nice blanket. It's an Afghan. So we're going to use an Afghan.
His grandmother needed it.
Yeah. And we're going to say, okay, family, gather around. It's time to mourn. It's like, get him out of here.
We have to get a bigger casket, though, because this is a pet casket. It will still have to be bigger.
All right.
Anyways. We digress.
We digress.
Often.
Yes.
Often. So it's just an amazing business model that really, if you think about all of franchising and you say, well, how many home care franchises do you know? You could just go on and on and on.
Yeah.
How many sub-franchises do you know?
Coffee franchises.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Even all your home services franchises, sure. Right?
Of
with
course.
Cleaning and so forth.
Well, we were at an expo.
Insulation.
Yeah.
Insulation.
You're a big insulation
guy.
Yeah, gutters.
You gutters. Love gutters, yeah. Don't gutters, you?
Yeah. This gutter franchise is huge. But we were at an expo.
Every house that has gutters.
Yeah.
By the way.
And two... guys putting them on.
Yeah.
My cutters have plants growing in them.
Yeah. But we I was telling a friend of mine about this concept, and his first comment was, oh my gosh, the white space out there for this, because nobody's doing it.
Yeah. No. It's interestingly, or at least interesting to me, there was a franchise, I don't hear about this anymore, that was a crematorium franchise for people.
Ooh.
Right? Because I think that was an underserved market. Remember, when we were kids, everybody got buried.
Yes.
Nobody got cremated.
Yeah, most people are getting cremated.
And now it's all about the cremation, right? So,
and then back to, like, this industry, the license and the permitting is so... It's much easier versus cremation for humans.
Yeah, there's actually no licensing.
Yeah.
No, there's zero licensing in this business because you're dealing with animals.
Now, sure.
I think eventually that could possibly change.
Of course,
because
it's revenue.
There's money.
It's revenue.
Yes,
sure.
Exactly. All there is the hardest part is the EPA standards of finding the right location for that incinerator.
Because it's a hazardous material, the smoke.
Not it. It's just the fire hazard side of it. It's more about the EPA, obviously. But there's
cheap rent because you can't do it in the middle of town.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's two classes. You can do light industrial, Class A, Class B. Our corporate location's in a Class B area, but they're paying $2,000 a month in rent.
Yeah.
But you can go in a Class A, which we have a turnkey location right now that's in Class A, and it's really pretty, right? It's a nice area. You don't feel like you're going to get mobbed or anything like that.
Sure.
And this, the rent's like $6,600 a month.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Your choice.
All right, so we will get back to where you are currently, but let's go way back, right?
Did we just do that at the same time?
Before you got into franchise development. And so talk about formal education prior to, and your experience prior to franchise development, because you've got a long history of franchise development. So how did you get there from, say, high school?
Yeah, so I was highly motivated as a kid. I got a job when I was 14 years old and started buying my own school clothes, bought my own car. I even bought my own car insurance because my dad was ripping me off.
And you got your own apartment at what age?
Yeah, I got my own apartment my senior year in high school just
to
get the hell out.
I don't want to say every one of our guests, but probably we're self-motivated in this way from high school on, right? And I know I had a job in high school. I mean, I didn't want in high school, but I guess I was self-motivated in the sense that I wanted to get a scholarship to get the hell out of Dodge. Right. Now, I happen to live back in
Dodge City.
Okay,
Eric grew up in Dodge City.
Right. But the fact of the matter, the fact of the matter is that it is interesting, right, that this thing is hardwired in...
It's in the DNA.
In
it
almost
is.
All of our guests. Okay, so...
Yeah. I mean, it didn't hurt that I had a mom that was driving force to make sure me and my identical twin sister didn't turn out the way she did.
And your identical twin sister, where is she today?
She's one of the top insurance agents for. She was with MetLife. She was number one for several years.
So
in
she
row.
Was hardwired the same way.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
We're super competitive. We're identical.
So after high school, then where?
So then I went to school to be an art teacher.
Oh.
I love art. I don't see it. We were watching a movie the other day. I was like, oh, that's a Rothko. That's a Picasso.
That's crazy.
No, it's not your knowledge of art. It's your teaching. I don't see that.
And you know what? You know when that really came to fruition for me was COVID. Right. When I was like, my kids are at home, and I'm like, God darn it. Thank God I didn't become a teacher. I have zero patience for this. But yes, that's funny. That's true.
Right.
So, but during college, I was not a traditional student because I got married right out of high school like an idiot. And
so you were married while you were in college. Where'd you go to college at?
So I went to a state school in New Hampshire, Plymouth State University, which is known for teaching.
Okay.
And
the state of Plymouth is a big state.
No, it's New Hampshire. Oh. Plymouth State University in New Hampshire. It's in the sticks.
Plymouth State. I'm sorry. Then, Plymouth is not a state.
Yeah. But you know, during college, I wasn't a traditional student, so I worked full-time and went to school full-time.
So you didn't get an education degree, or you did?
I did. I had bachelor's.
All right.
And I had went to Plymouth State for 2 years, and then my husband at the time, I forced him to do it, which is a terrible idea. I did all his term papers and everything. But he wanted out, so I transferred to a different state, University of New Hampshire.
Okay.
And during that, I got my first sales job. Do you remember the store?
This is great.
Service credit. Not service. Service.
Service master?
Merchandise. Service merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that store?
I do know
store?
The name, yeah. But Server, I can't.
You're old enough to know that.
Yeah, but I can't remember. I just can't remember.
It was a big department store.
Oh.
And they have a jewelry counter. And it was, at the time, it was America's Jewelry.
Used to be one in Quincy.
They were everywhere. Service merchandise.
That's a hard sale.
And so I got hired in the jewelry department. I was a massive tomboy, okay? Yeah. I wore Umbro. I was a soccer chick. I didn't even wear jewelry. And so they put me in the jewelry department. I was like, are you serious?
In what city was this in?
Dover, New Hampshire, and within a very short period of time, you sell jewelry, and then you sell these extended warranties on this jewelry.
That's
right?
Where the money's at, the extended warranty.
Yes, and you not only, every time I sold one
guys.
Of those.
Remember the F&I guys at the dealerships? It's like,
sure
you want the extended warranty. Yeah, you want the warranty on
99%
the undercarriage, right?
Yes, I sold cars in college, too. Yeah. They make so much money off of, like, the financing, that's why you never
So how did you, was your first sales job out of necessity, meaning that was what was available, or did you gravitate to sales?
No, it was just, I just applied to this job, and they're like, yeah, we think you would do great in the jewelry department. I was like, okay, I don't wear jewelry, and I dress like a little boy, but let's try it. And very quickly, I learned...
Why do you think that?
So I very, very quickly realized how much money I could make on spiff money or whatever commission to sell these stupid extended warranties.
Yeah.
And I
key
was
word
like,
there was stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Very stupid. But I sold the shit out of these things. And within 6 months, they're like, do you want to be our, apply for our full-time diamond consultant job? And I was like, so that was so you could sell, like, the precious gems, including diamonds, of course. But you
now,
have to take
tell
this
me more about
test.
This extended warranty. How long does it last? Well, it lasts for the life of the jewelry.
No.
Or your life.
No,
right?
It's only a 1 or 2 year plan, dude. You had to renew it every time.
Oh, really?
Okay. Wait a second. So if my jewelry dies, like, within 6 months, it's over.
Yeah. So I took this. I took this course.
I don't know. Let's ask the ferret.
Yes, you're getting fucked. Don't mind.
The ferret's the one that fucked.
We have to get a stuffed ferret in here now.
The ferret's the one that chewed the lobster clasp off.
There you go.
And swallowed it. Now you need a new lobster clasp. Do you know how much those cost? I would know, and I would tell them.
That's why she sold them.
So, I took this course and I became you know, precious gemstone certified. Wow. And they hired me to be the full-time diamond consultant. But now there's these women, I've worked there for 15 years, but there are these old ladies part-time.
Sure.
And every time somebody came in and wanted to see a precious stone, they had to give me that client.
Oh, that had to make them so happy.
Oh my God, they did not like me. And everyone's like, but I crushed it. And I really enjoyed working with the clients and their stories and their love stories.
Don't
and
you
stuff.
Love? And don't you love those
I could write short stories of all these love stories.
Any like, guy, it was so much fun. Any guy that's fucked a diamond, they know it's like, well, here, look at it under the magnifying glass. And it's like buying a motorcycle, your first motorcycle. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
Right.
Okay? With a diamond, you really don't know what you're doing. It's like, see how it glimmers? And it's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
But that was not me. I always took the approach from day one to now is like the education. And that's actually when I first learned not to judge somebody, because this dude came in dressed in like stained clothes, ripped clothes and stuff, and nobody wanted to help him. And he was probably my biggest client.
Spending
he spent
a fortune
so much money.
Love.
Yeah. It was awesome. So anyways, that was my first sales job. And everyone was like, you're going to school to be an art teacher? And I'm like, yep. And at the college I went to, it was a 5-year program, master's program. And so I only had 2 courses left, but they wanted me to do a 6-month internship for free. And I was like, screw this.
No, I'm selling diamonds.
Yeah, no. Well, now I'd moved on to a call center.
This is awesome.
All right, so you had sales now in your blood, or was
it
money driven?
Was it
money
combo.
Driven?
It was a combination. I was like, wow, I'm pretty good at this. And then I went and worked at a car dealership for an incredibly short period of time because I did not get along with the owner. His name was Dick.
And how, he was a dick.
Yes.
How did you, by the way, funniest name that I ever ran across, I had a opposing counsel named Richard Benigna. Did I tell you this? And he went by
you
Dick.
You don't even have to continue.
And he would call me. This is an absolute true story. And he would call me and he'd say, Eric, Dick Benigna. Swear to God.
Oh, can you just... I would have loved to have been at his wedding.
Dick Benigna. All right.
Are you going to take Din Benigna?
All right.
So I went and worked at a call center.
Yeah.
That was an inbound call center, and I sold natural Viagra.
Well, but... So, hold on.
To Dick Benigna.
Are you just going to go over that?
Okay. Just for a second. So, sales, all right? Because this is a... this fascinates me, right? I had to learn how to sell because I, you know, was a CPA. I was a litigator. Never built a book of business, right? Didn't even know what that was. Didn't even know what that meant, right? And so I learned how to sell literally from Zig Ziglar. And I did quite well in sales. I sometimes wonder... Was that in me? Was that in me to begin with? And I really didn't learn. I just needed to release it, right? Versus, Jamie, you didn't have formal sales training. I mean, on-the-job training,
right,
which is obviously the best training. But you didn't have formal sales training, but it was in you somehow. So let's talk about sales, right? You talked about the dude that looks like he had no money, no one wanted to talk to him. It's part empathy, right? It's part understanding where they're coming from. I don't want to put words in your mouth. So tell us about that a little bit. All jokes aside, right?
This is 100% agree that I was naturally born a salesperson.
Right.
100%. But I also believe that everybody's a salesperson. They just don't realize it. Because you have to ask your kids for a hug. That's a sales proposition.
Yeah.
Everything is sales.
Right.
You're selling to get a job. You're selling to get into a college or a scholarship. You're selling all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it came very, very natural to me.
But a large part is confidence.
It
right?
is. Oh my gosh!
Absolutely. Once you realized you
100%.
Once you realized you were good at it,
100%.
You weren't nervous anymore.
Yeah, and that, in franchise sales, and I know that's coming. Yeah. But you know, when I talk to new people that get into franchise sales, I say, "Here's the deal: you just have to be incredibly confident. Yeah. And if you're not, just fake it.
Yeah.
Fake that you're confident, because at the end of the day, once you realize that they need you to get past go, that changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking about this when you were just talking about born. I sold produce as a kid because my dad grew so much of it. And I sold it on the weekends of town. I had no sales experience. Mm-hmm. I was able to sell it because my dad was so passionate about what he was growing, telling me how it was grown, why it was grown, why it's going to taste good. I sold that shit all day long in the corner.
Well, I still believe, and maybe Jamie with her extended jewelry warranty would disagree with this, but I still believe you have to believe in what you're selling. Mm.
Oh, 100%. But you know what I think the key is to my sales success is being 100% honest and upfront right away.
Yeah.
Lead with the bad, not with the good.
Yeah.
Lead with the bad. Here's the deal. This is going to cost you, this extended warranty is going to cost you $100 on this $50 jewelry item.
Right.
However, you know, like you lead with the bad and you're very upfront and honest.
It's what we've talked about. That honesty is huge. It's the unexpressed objection. So many brokers that I deal with, they don't investigate the unexpressed objection. And so they lose sales, and they never bring up the bad because they try to ignore it, and they hope that the candidate
won't find out,
won't consider it. But the candidate is considering it. They're not bringing it up, and the reason why they're not bringing it up is human behavior does not want to talk about the bad, right? You don't want to say bad things about people,
right?
Unless it's on Facebook and it's...
Facebook.
Right. Two Facebook.
What is that called?
Exactly.
Keyboard balls.
But you know, people don't say that to your face.
Keyboard balls.
Yeah. And so leading with the bad is saying, well, let's talk about the bad things that you're probably thinking about and let's address them.
I agree. And that's exactly how I've always done things. It's just, hey, you know, even with candidates like home watch caregivers, let me talk to you about on the very first call, the hardest part of this business is going to be finding caregivers because you have to have them.
Yeah.
You know, so this is what we've created to make sure that...
To address
you
all, it.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. But you have to... Or if there's something in a system where you know there's a lawsuit or you know that somebody closed, you know, you've got a candidate next to somebody that is about to close or going to close or has closed, you just got to be
honest. I know
this
is on your mind. Let me tell you why you don't need to worry about it.
But no, they may not even know it yet, right?
Bring it up.
You've got a candidate. And you know they're right next to a market that closed recently.
Yeah.
They're going to find out.
Of course.
Just freaking tell them.
Yeah, sure.
Like, hey, by the way, you're looking at a territory. You're actually purchasing. You could be purchasing a territory that closed within the last year.
Sure.
Let me tell you why it closed. And I did that.
Yeah.
I had to, where there was a situation where they closed. I was like, you're going to buy this potential territory that closed.
Right.
Let me tell you why it closed.
Sure. Boom. Of course.
And you just drop it like... I almost said drop it like it's hot.
but we've talked about that. The unexpressed objection, you got to address it. Or bring it up. Even if they haven't brought it up, bring it up.
Don't be afraid of it.
Don't be afraid of it. And if you lose them, fine. It's better to lose them than sell them. And then they find out and they go, you never told me about this.
Yeah, well, and you as an attorney are like, oh, you're going to get sued. Yeah.
But even, but even forget the legal part of it. It's like, do you want to sell that way?
Right.
No, exactly. No, that's my point. I want to sleep at night.
Sure,
I believe in responsibility.
And I think that's where, when we met back in May, I think that's kind of the next day you and I were talking. I was like, holy shit, we speak the same language in franchising, because we all know there's a bunch of shit bags in franchising.
A lot.
And then going back to leading what's out there, when I do my FDD review, like, I learned like the process from Jamie, and there's a bankruptcy in my FDD.
Yeah.
Don't dance around it.
Yeah.
It's there for
just
a reason. Explain why it happened and explain how we're going to learn from it. Explain this is how it's going to benefit you.
Tell them how you learned from those two experiences that got you there.
Yes.
And why you created something better.
Exactly. So one of my friends that I helped get into franchise development, she got on a brand and the item 20 was not so pretty.
Yeah.
And I said, you need to, when you do the FDD review, you need to point it out and address it.
Yeah.
And tell them what happened.
Sure.
And what you're doing to fix it.
Yeah.
And she was very like, no. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you,
do this.
It will bite you in the ass every time. Okay, sooner or later.
So jewelry, car sales,
Natural Viagra.
Out. Yeah. And then what?
The call center stuff was fun. Oh. That was like a boiler room situation. That was very... very Wolf
These
of Wall
were
Street.
Cold calls?
Yeah, they were inbound calls, so it was really interesting. So
the inbound calls were enticed through some sort of advertising.
Yeah, magazine, call for late your night risk, TV. Yeah, magazines, late night TV, radio ads, call for your risk-free trial for Natural Viagra.
Oh, okay.
For stamina
here's the issue with Viagra and testosterone. Guys know they have a problem. They've self-identified the problem. So they know they want a solution to it.
Or a good marketing has created a fallacy that they have a problem. Is that the word? You know what I mean?
I see what you did.
That was a double entendre right there.
Very good. No, but my point is that, like with the testosterone centers, like
my God.
Jeff Becker out there.
Every quarter.
It's like, in all of them, the people that come in are hot leads.
Oh,
and it's because they know they have a problem that they want to fix. Now the real issue that you need to get them by is, can they afford it? Do they see themselves being able to pay for this testosterone therapy? Right. And by the way,
I think you're overthinking this call center situation that I was selling.
Right. But these guys knew they needed some sort of solution.
Or wanted something.
Yeah, it was a 30-day risk-free trial, and I had to convince them to buy a year's supply. And then if it didn't work, they'd get their money back.
Oh.
I was their top salesperson.
Well, that's a good... that's a good value proposition.
Right.
It's no risk.
Right.
It was, you know, ultimately it doesn't matter what the product was. We sold some other crap too, Kaito Trim and stuff, like weight loss products and acne products and stuff. But the biggest one was...
So you didn't find that sales process that hard?
No, it's... It was fun. You know what? That was good. The funniest thing was I could, you know, just like I could write some love stories about my my days selling jewelry, I can write some hysterical stories about how I got rid of the perverts that called in and messed up our...
Oh, wow.
Messed up, yeah. Because every hour they had this big board, right? So every hour...
Jesus,
they're checking the...
Boiler room.
A boiler room. They had, you know, the close rate and how many calls were coming in. But pervs would call, and it would ruin, because they would hang up until they got a girl. And so it was ruining the close rate, right? So everyone's like, there's a perv.
So give us an example of your pitch.
Let Jamie answer the phone.
Give us an example of your pitch.
So, Eric, like, when last time you called in to do this, how many times did you hang up till you got the girl?
About 20.
You know, the pitch is just like anything. You just ask, tell me about your why, right? Tell me about yourself. Tell me about your why. What's going on? I mean, honestly, like, that's my point is, you know, where I am today to where I began, it hasn't changed. It's the same thing. It's just creating a relationship.
So, but the other thing is that sales of Viagra, okay, versus sales of cars, sales of warranties... You know, I would, back at Greensfelder, when I tried to institute sales training, and of course it was shot down by the board, even though our revenue was up 15% just 12 months after I instituted sales training, it was, you know, that's not what lawyers do. It's like, yeah, you dumb motherfuckers, right? But the thing is that... I said, and I still believe this, whether you're selling vacuums or Tupperware, like Zig Ziglar, or legal services, the principles are the same. And that's critically important, okay, that you need to believe in your product. You need to believe in the service. You need to believe that that buyer will be benefited by what you're selling, right? And there are very few principles in the end of sales, of successful salespeople. But if you don't have them, you're not going to be successful. But they apply no matter what you're selling. Right?
Can I add, though, one of the most important things, I agree with what you're saying. You have to believe in what you are selling 100%. But my success has been built on being a real person and building a relationship with the person and not being a salesperson. I have lost count of how many people said, I love that you're not selling me, because I'm not. And it's 100%. All about building a relationship. If you are real with the person 100%. And you create a relationship, I have so many people that I am friends with, candidates that never bought and would still write me a review on LinkedIn saying she's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and how many candidates have told brokers and brokers that will still work with me even though I couldn't close their client because they said she was the absolute best person we worked with, just the brand isn't the right fit for me.
Sure.
That is so insanely important. And I might even trump that over whether you believe in the product or not.
You know, back to Jamie, when she left her last brand, you know, I was there when all that went down and she was stressed about it. And I said, they just did you a favor. I said, your opportunity now is unbelievable because of the relationships I've physically seen and witnessed that you have built. You have just basically said, all right, I can write my number on a napkin and push it across the table. But not only could she do that, now she followed her passion to staying in the pet industry that she wanted to, just because not so much the sales, but the relationship she has built over the 13 years in Frandev.
But let's go back to that honest person, right? So part confidence, part belief in what you're doing, okay? But I tell people all the time, I give them 1 hour for free, right? And I tell them, if you feel that I am selling you, hang up the phone.
Eric, I have our first email that you sent me.
Yeah. If I'm selling you, then you hang up, right? Because that's not our purpose.
Right.
Our purpose is to educate you as to what we're doing here, the opportunity, the product, the service, whatever it is, all right? That's our purpose, because you cannot make a good decision based upon poor information.
Right. Your email said, I sat down, we did our consultation, and then you sent me an email, or you basically said, we're going to work together 6 months. And after 6 months, we'll reevaluate. If you don't like me, I don't like you, we go our separate ways.
Yeah.
What you need done, send an email. I don't give a shit about punctuation, capitalization, grammar. Yeah. Send me what you need done. I'll get the shit done.
Right.
And we've worked together 15 plus years, if not more.
Yeah.
So that's an example of that. I wasn't sold. You told me who you were, what you had to offer, and we went from there.
Right, right. Because in doing that, you're gaining trust.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's exactly
what it is. People want to do business with people they like and trust.
And you're coming from the hardest place to get a client as an attorney, because everybody's guard's already up. Don't trust any attorney.
Exactly. Nor should you.
Now we're in a situation where Jamie, we'll give an example, Jamie, don't trust franchising.
Yeah, well,
especially now, it's even worse than it used to be when I started doing Frandev with Meineke, because now FSOs are so highly popular and the education is getting out there.
So explain what an FSO is.
A franchise sales organization. So there's a lot of emerging brands that can't afford to hire somebody internally like myself.
Right.
And so they will use an outside source. And they're not all bad by any means. But they sell the product and then they leave and they're out.
Boiler room.
I'm sure there's that. I'm sure there's examples of that. But at the end of the day, I have plenty of examples. I have multiple candidates now. They're, you know, the internet is an amazing thing, right?
Right.
They can self-educate themselves. And I will tell you, probably 5 out of 10 candidates will ask me, do you work directly for the company or do you work for an outside sales organization?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time now. When I was at Meineke, that never happened.
Okay, so hold on. So we're not at Meineke yet, okay? We're selling Viagra to perverts. All right, so where do you go from there after the call center?
So then I went into the mortgage industry, and I worked for HSBC doing residential and commercial financing.
HSBC, that's the HSB Switzerland Bank, or
it's,
no?
It's HSBC Bank. I don't know. It was huge. It was. I don't know if it's still the biggest, but it was one of the biggest ones.
I think it's one of the biggest banks.
But I was one of their subprime lenders. So,
yeah.
And that's kind of where now it gets me into. In 2007... I saw the writing on the wall with everything happening with subprime lending in the real estate market.
Sure.
And I posted my resume on Monster. I don't even know if Monster still exists.
I don't know.
Monster.
You know my story about the other one. What's the other one that I
used? Indeed.
Indeed.
Oh, well, that, I don't think Indeed
existed.
Total
bullshit. Indeed is one of the most useless vendors out there. All
that
right?
didn't exist back in 2007, yeah, I don't believe. Right. So
that's finding a deal in a haystack. I put an advertisement out for a lawyer. The first resume I got was from a French lawyer, all in French. And it's like, I need him to be in St. Louis. I said, I need him to be in St. Louis. I guess there's a St. Louis in France. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. No shit.
Well, you have a very targeted audience, I think. Yeah. So I posted my resume on Monster, and that is where franchisesolutions.com hired me. So that was my first... 2007, April of 2007 is when I started in the franchise
world. Solutions. Now, I know that name, but I can't remember.
Is that operations?
No,
what
it's
is it?
Online lead generation. So
Who owned that? Who owned that company?
It is, I don't remember how it started, but it's Dominion.
Oh.
Dominion ended up buying, I don't know if they still own it. It was that who bought it while I was working there.
Franchise Solutions. I do remember that.
They also own Franchise Gator, Franchise.com.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's all about lead generation.
Networks. Yeah, it's all online lead generation.
Not sure how good the leads were, but generation.
Oh, I can tell you now, I know what they were. But on the other side, I believed in it.
Yeah.
But that was before brokers were super huge.
Yeah.
The broker networks weren't that big at that point.
The brokerage networks are pretty recent. Within the last 15 years, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Brokers are life for me.
Yeah. But Franet was around, but there weren't a lot of these other brokerage networks back then. Yeah.
There are so many now.
I gotta shift my S-words. All right, so you got in this. You got into this lead generation company. How did that go?
That was so much fun because now I'm traveling all the time. Oh. And
was your role?
My role was to work with franchisors, just like both of you gentlemen.
Sell them lead generation
online.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And back then, lead generation was still... Yeah.
It was still huge.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
as much now, but it was still super huge.
Right. And back then, the lead generation, the leads you were paying for was like $8 a lead or whatever, right? I mean, it was a lot cheaper than...
Now they're $35 a lead.
Yeah, whatever. And you're still only selling one out of 100 or whatever the hell that
is. When I first started on lead generation, you just buy packages, right? Monthly price packages and stuff. And then before I left, they were going to a CPL model, cost per lead package, or even a link out model.
Your first 100 leads are for free. Really? Where do you get those 100 leads?
They never did that, but yeah, there were some definitely
there you
some
go.
Brands that
with
did that.
Telephone numbers.
yep, exactly.
Start calling.
Yep. But I started my CFE program during that, and then
CFE was
certified
that
certified franchise executive.
Okay.
Through the International
IFA?
Franchise Association.
Sure.
Yep, through the IFA.
Okay.
And at that point, I felt that CFE was really important because you've got to show to these franchisors that
you actually
know what the hell you're talking about.
Of course. Right. Yeah, of course. I've often thought about that CFE, but I've never just... I don't know that I have
need it. I personally don't think you
need
it.
You don't need it, Eric.
I think it's great for... Oh, please forgive me, IFA. But I believe that it's great for suppliers.
Sure.
Suppliers need it.
Yeah.
Because they need to understand who they're, when they're talking to franchisors, that they know what they're talking about.
Sure.
They can speak the same language.
Sure, sure.
But for now, where I'm at, if I try to tell a candidate I have a CFE,
that
they're
doesn't
like,
mean anything.
What
I don't
the
give
hell?
A shit.
They don't.
Yeah.
They're
well,
like,
certified franchise executive.
I've got it on my title, but
right.
But I haven't renewed it, so they probably could renege that from me.
Yeah, what the hell?
But anyways.
That's like your lawyer of the year plaque. Just send us $500.
What
your
are you lawyer saying? Number one, it's $950 a year. Okay, so I don't know who you think you are, mister.
You're still number
what
one to me, so it doesn't matter.
What year did you get that?
What do you mean by number one?
What year did you get that?
2021, 2022, 2023,
24, 25, 26.
I have been awarded 2024.
I got an email that said, you know, you've been elected for the who's who of 2020.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about who's who. All right, where are we on time?
Oh, we're on pace to be well over.
Okay.
Oh,
so
absolutely. We haven't even got to friend.
The first
yet.
Who's who was in high school, all right? And this would have been 1979, because I was a junior becoming a senior. And who's who, an American high school student, approached me, okay? And it's like, oh, shit. Look at this. I've been selected for the who's who in American high school students. It's like my mom looks at me. She
look
goes,
at how red his
I, didn't
face
even,
is.
I didn't even think you were that smart. Right? It's like, I'm not. Right? So I accepted the award, right, which was a piece of paper. And then, like, 2 weeks afterwards, my mom got the phone call. It's like, well, would you like the leather-bound edition of Who's Who? And of course, she bought it.
Right.
Of
right?
course.
And we get this book, and like, I'm thumbing through the pages, and every motherfucker is in
Excuse
there.
Me.
Everybody's in there. It's like, Who's Who means who's a high school student? Look, there's my name, and it's spelled wrong.
It's spelled wrong.
They didn't need the second. They didn't need the first who's, right? They
right.
just said, who was a high school student?
And then, you know the person selling that, they had the leaderboard.
They knew it was bullshit.
Yeah, just like at the call center.
Yeah.
There's a leaderboard
Wait
at the call
a
center.
And it was, how old are you?
And it was a number of suckers.
She
might have
been like,
not who's who. It's like, and as soon as they close you, as soon as they close you, then close your mouth, it's like, another who's a sucker. Click.
Who's a dipshit?
That shit still exists. I literally just got this email like 2 days ago. You've been selected for Who's Who of 2022. I'm
that
like,
that sounds
what?
Prestigious.
I was like, yes.
Goddamn
you know,
state
add that
I've been
to my
selected.
LinkedIn profile.
Oh, that's funny.
You got CFE on there. You might as well have that.
Who's who?
All right. So
is there an owl
now you're in franchising. And you're in lead generation, you understand that. So this mm-hmm. is getting toward the whole process of selling a franchise.
Yep.
All right, so where does that go?
Then I went to Franchise Business Review.
Okay.
And they do satisfaction surveys, and that was fascinating. Oh, man, I
but
really
this doesn't
that.
Sound, oh, it's still a sales job because you're selling this to franchisors.
Everything I do is a sales
Right, but
job.
You're selling this to franchisors.
Yeah, so I'm still on the vendor side
okay.
and working with franchisors, but it's a different approach. It's a different conversation. It's about, hey, let's survey your franchisees on all levels of satisfaction.
We'll make your system better. We'll make your system better once
well,
we find out what's wrong with it.
You know, the data can
yeah.
be used.
Yeah.
You know, they still have to take that data and actually do something with
right.
it, right?
But
right. what was really cool is by doing that, you got to see what good who good franchisors were and who
oh, yeah.
bad franchisors
yeah.
were.
Yeah.
And so I've signed an NDA, so I can't tell you anything. But, man, I know where the freaking bodies lay, let me tell
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
I saw some terrible, terrible stuff. There was a survey that came back one time, and this person didn't even choose to be anonymous. They gave their name.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they wanted... Actually, I don't even know if I should say this on the podcast.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can. Okay. So they said the new president, they were going to mess around with their wife and kill the CEO first, then mess around the wife, and like terrible, I mean, absolutely terrible. Horrendous. It was terrible. Terrible stuff. And I was like, oh my God, when I read this. And they actually end up calling the police and everything and stuff like that.
Another happy franchisee. Yeah,
and I thought I've went off the deep end.
That's an unfortunate story. But I luckily saw lots Quiznos. Of awesome. Yeah. I actually saw
Steak
lots.
And say.
Oh my God.
GNC.
I'm not going to say who it was. But oh, we can. They weren't in the food industry, believe it or not. But it was really cool too, though, because they would rank all the industry terrible. They would rank all the industries on highest to lowest overall.
It is good data.
Satisfaction.
It is good data.
That data.
Oh, you're going to the heart of it.
Oh my God, the data was so cool to look at, and you can compare your data compared to your industry as a whole or as franchising as a whole, etc. But what was really cool is when franchisors actually gave a shit.
Yes,
and they took that data and they worked on it. So Wild Birds Unlimited is actually one of the best examples.
Oh, Wild Birds,
I never got that.
Well, I get a great, they have a healthy franchise.
I know they do.
You've got to be a bird person.
And I've met the leadership of that, or at least the prior leadership of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Very nice people.
Yeah. Oh, good people.
Yeah.
So Wild Birds Unlimited, when they first started surveying, their results were terrible. And so, but they took it to heart. And they actually made changes based on what they saw. Right. And then now their results
arrogance trump royalty.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So, you know.
Good for them.
It was awesome. And they're still fantastic today.
Yeah. How much money can you make selling bird seed?
I don't know, but they're doing well.
I know they are.
I guess we should pull their FDD and I can tell you.
Right.
But that particular position really kind of
opened your eyes to franchising.
It paved my way to FranDev, and I was at the IFA last year, and I ran into Michelle Monroe and Eric Stites, who are the owner and CEO, you know, president CEO, and I straight up told them, I said, guys, thank you. I thank them, because learning what I learned from that really, truly, I feel like helped me understand how to work with candidates.
Because you started to learn the value of a good system, of a healthy system.
That it can be done right.
Yeah, versus an unhealthy system.
Yes.
The correct way.
What matters to a franchisee and what doesn't matter to a franchisee. Sure. It was hysterical. I would get on a call after the survey was done. I was like, so tell me, franchisor, why do you think you did well, or do you think you did bad? And they're like, oh, no, I did well. Okay, great. Tell me, why did you do well? And they say, you know, A, B, and C. You know, oh, because we have corporate locations and they love that we test the products there. B, because we have an amazing FAC council. And C, because
They like our marketing plan.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Our marketing is amazing. Right. But in reality, all three of those reasons why they sucked, why the results came back terrible.
So people would misread the data, or they just...
They had these preconceived notions of why they think they were awesome.
Yeah.
But in reality, those were... But when you would tell them those results...
Yeah.
Franchisor A would be like,
oh, this is before they would get their data back.
Yeah. She would ask the question before
the
they saw the
why
data.
They thought they were so terrific.
Hey, we just concluded your survey. Let's talk about the results. Tell me, do you think you did well or do you think you did bad? Oh, I think I did well. Great.
Here
why
you
do
go.
You think you did well?
Yeah.
And they would say A, B, and C.
Yeah,
In reality, A, B, and C were why they did terrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it was an eye-opening moment. Now, the good franchisors would be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I need to fix this. The bad franchisors would be like, I just need to get rid of all of these franchisees and start
all these over. People that are
they're wrong.
Yeah.
I just bought this franchise, and I'm gonna rehaul the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna kick all of these franchisees out.
Data is incredible. It's incredibly humbling, and you better be prepared
if you're willing to look at it.
But you got to look at it, and you got to adjust, right? And I mean, unless you like the data, right?
Well,
but you have to be honest.
You have to. Yeah. And some people, look in the mirror. You got to be willing to look in the mirror.
Always.
But that, Eric, we've talked about this. The freaking arrogance.
Oh, my God.
The arrogance of some of these executives leaving these franchise companies.
Oh, my God.
Such asshats.
Because they have been measured. They measure themselves by money, right? So they go out and they see that Mercedes, and they drive home, and they see that big house, and they assume, and I'm not saying that they're wrong in their assumption, because that's how we're set up. They assume, I must be good, because look at how I've been rewarded.
Right.
As opposed to, did I really do good? The brokers out there, and you know I know a lot of them, okay, I must be doing a good thing. Because look at the money that I'm making doing it, right? So much in the U.S. is measured by how much money do you make. You must be good if you're paid a lot of money, right? Which, unfortunately, is simply not the truth.
True.
We all like money, okay? Oh. I mean, it gives us security and nice things and all the rest. But it's not the measure of the value that you're adding many times.
Right.
Okay, so you learn about good franchisors, bad franchisors, how to build a good system. Where do you go from there?
So then one time I was at a conference in Houston, and I'm from New England, from northern New Hampshire. I have a very heavy Boston accent, but I learned how to hide it.
Well, you don't anymore.
No, I do. I've learned how to hide it.
Oh.
It comes out when I'm drinking or if you piss me off.
Oh.
So,
you're going to see both of those eventually.
So, I was in Houston and hanging out with some friends at one of the expos, and I was drinking, and I was with some Meineke people, Dave Schaefer's and Ed Pearson, and my Boston accent came out, and Dave Schaefer goes, "You sound like you're from Boston." I'm like, "Yeah, I basically am. My family grew up in Lynn, Mass, right outside of Boston." He's like, "I've never heard that accent come from you before." I'm like, "Well, I'm drinking, so I can't hide it." He's like, "I need somebody from Meineke from the Northeast that lives in the Northeast that can speak the language of the people from the Northeast."
Has Meineke wanted to grow in that area or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, so Meineke was purchased, Driven Brands, which was purchased at that point by Harvest Partners Equity.
Yeah. Private equity folks. Yeah.
And they got rid of all the entire leadership team, the good old boys.
So this is when Meineke was no longer Meineke Mufflers. They had expanded into other stuff.
Yeah, it's total car care.
Because when I was a kid, Meineke was Meineke
Mufflers. Just Mufflers.
And then there were no more Mufflers. Yeah, it's like,
nobody buys mufflers anymore. So it's total car care, but it was purchased by, it was a part of Driven Brands, and it was purchased by Harvest Partners. And, but when Harvest Partners purchased, they got rid of all the good old boys and they hired all these executives from Burger King.
And oh my God, not them.
That's
what
the FDD got screwed up. No, I'm joking.
They're actually pretty damn smart. But, however, well, these Meineke no smart people at Burger King. You have to understand these
Meineke.
Let's bring
in a pedophile king.
Oh my God! But these Meineke franchisees are good old boys.
How about a Whopper, kids?
Burger King executives are wearing skinny jeans and Armani suits and stuff, and so they're going to conference, you know, and they're like, "Where are your jeans and shit kickers? Like, what's wrong with you?" So they're like, "We need somebody." They hadn't expanded the Northeast in a really long time, other than a couple of, you know, stores here and there. They're like, "We need somebody from the Northeast." So when they hired me, I'd never done Friend Of before. And they're like, "Here's the deal. Our franchisees in the Northeast are not our biggest fans. So your first thing is you've got to befriend them."
Right.
So, and that's what I did, is that was my first franchise development job. And I, bottom line, I did what I call road shows, where I would go out to my entire territory and meet with individual franchisees and become friends with them. Mm-hmm. And they were, and at first I was like, a girl selling automotive? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That actually was a huge benefit for me.
Right. And how long did you do that?
I was there for a few years. I can't remember exactly, but
you had to make you had to make the local franchisees fans of the brand. Otherwise, you'll never expand in the
I had to make them fans of Jamie Levine.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But I also helped them
understand.
We've
also talked about don't develop. No offense to your current employer, don't develop that brand. Continue to develop your brand.
Yes,
right, because that you can always take with you.
Yeah,
1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened was I helped educate them because of, again, going back to my franchise business review days, one of the biggest things that I saw through that was franchise advisory councils. Mm-hmm. I saw franchise FACs that worked and didn't work. Meineke's FAC was freaking powerful. Mm. Holy crap. Mm. Was it powerful? And they didn't realize how powerful they were. Mm. And so I would go out to dinner. Because
they could influence the franchisees.
Huge. It made a huge influence on things. And so when I would go out to dinner, I would listen to them complain. And I said, you guys don't know how good you get it. You have it. Mm-hmm. And I would explain to them about... I would educate them on all these other brands because of what I learned.
You used your data. Yeah, that's good. That's
excellent. And they were just like, and then I said, guys, you guys stop worrying about the fact that these people are from BK. Burger King does well for a reason. Let's try to take a different approach of the definition of insanity.
Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Exactly. So
is now what Burger King does.
Yeah. But I was able to create
these... How about a Whopper Junior this year? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a smaller Whopper.
That's what I get with cheese that I'm making.
Too much cheese.
Yeah. Not enough. My lasagna's got 5 cheeses in it. But anyways... It worked. I created these relationships. There's still, you know, after I left Burger King, I had multiple franchisees. Jamie, when are you coming
back? After you left Meineke.
Yeah. What did I say? Burger King. Meineke. Now I need a Whopper. When I left Meineke, I had multiple franchisees, like, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? Still friends with multiple of them. But they became my validators big time.
Sure.
Because they trusted me and I did really, really well. I awarded probably more franchises in the Northeast than they had seen in a very, very long time.
So you're doing well with Meineke. Why leave?
So as in most franchise systems, they go through an ebb and flow where you've got to clean up the system, right? And so Meineke was on average awarding around 100 territories a year.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's
and I was doing, or stores, they did stores, not territories.
Yeah.
And my territory was 25 to 30 a year. And they got to a point where we can't find,
we're sold out.
We've got to stop, got to clean up the system. And so that's what had happened.
Right.
They got to a point where like, development, let's clean up. And then of course, that affects what I do for a job. So I was recruited then by Homewatch Caregivers. And that's when I left to go to Homewatch.
And Homewatch is?
In-home senior care.
Okay. Which was exploding probably at this point.
Still is exploding.
Yeah. Because everybody's getting old.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And my first job as a kid was at 14, was at a home care facility. I became a caregiver.
You had some contact or connection with that industry.
Yep, absolutely. And but it was an interesting road to start there. And
but there's no way that this concept or this franchisor is as big as Meineke, right?
Oh, absolutely not. Much Meineke smaller. Has over 1,000 locations. Homewatch Caregivers was a legacy brand as well. Been in business since the 80s and had well over 100 locations. So
but
it was
much
a legacy.
Smaller than Meineke.
Definitely. Meineke is over 1,000.
But so locations. Now you were taking your experience with the big brand. Everybody knew what Meineke was.
They had like an 84% brand recognition at that time.
That's crazy.
And now you've taken it to a much smaller brand that's looking to grow,
which has no brand recognition.
No, I mean, home care has no really big brand recognition.
Still.
No, they don't, because people don't think about home care until it's, you know, it's the end of the line.
Situation.
And, yeah. So, yeah.
There have been a couple that have done some national advertising, right? Like
Visiting Angels is probably
the biggest. Visiting Angels, right. And then...
A Place for Mom is not a home care company. That is a generation like Angie's List, but a lot of people think that.
Oh, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, so a Home Watch caregivers would advertise on that, actually.
Huh, interesting. I got a Place for Mom. I don't know what that means. My mom's been dead for several years.
So she's on your mantle.
I don't know what that means. A Place for Mom.
Oh, my gosh.
With that said. All right, so you grew this Home Watch Caregivers, I'm assuming.
It was great. When I first started there, though, it was a unique situation where the gentleman that hired me was like, you can't sell, which I hate the word sell. I like awarding because I do believe in responsible growth. And you can't sell for Home Watch like you sell Meineke. And I was like,
well, what do you mean?
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. He thought I was too aggressive and stuff like that. Anyways, nonetheless, he left. I didn't. And boom.
Yeah.
And I did it the way I did Meineke and did really well. And it was really rewarding, actually, at the last conference. They were purchased by Authority Brands. At the last conference in November of last year, I had already transitioned to a new brand called Woofies, which are my first emerging brand. And but I went to
when the, you say emerging brand, what do you mean?
Brand new.
Yeah,
they had two units.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they had two other than the corporate location.
Yeah.
So, but during that conference, I went to the party for Home Watch caregivers, and they were. Because it had been the first conference since COVID, right? Oh. So they had up on stage, they were listing all the new owners.
Yeah.
And I was standing there with the COO, and there's page after page of new franchisees, and they were all people I brought into the system.
Wow.
And the COO put her arms around. She's like, you did that, Jamie.
Wow.
I said, no, we did that. But man, let me tell you, it made me cry.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Like,
yeah.
It cool. was yeah. awesome. 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 And then see, outside when they went voice. Through the review.
We
of the
did
year,
that. Inside voice.
No. I do believe in we, because at the end of the day, if they didn't like the overall system, it didn't matter how much magic I had. It wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So
inside voice is not the same as ferret voice, just right. so you know. All right. So why would you leave? It's growing.
This is going to sound terrible, but I was bored. I was bored. I have ADHD.
Bored with the brand?
I was bored with the fact that I could sell it in my sleep.
So let me tell you this. I believe, I've said this often, that inside franchise salespeople are nomadic. I've used that word constantly to describe them. And I do believe they are. I've never met an inside salesperson who has stayed with a brand more than 6 years. Truly. All right. And I've been across a bunch of them.
Yes.
All right. And there's always something that they decide to go somewhere else. They've been successful, so somebody else says, I'll pay you more, and that's real, okay? Or they believe, this is more times than not, they believe that they've been offered something originally that didn't ultimately come through, like support, right?
Right.
That's a yep. big deal. It's like, well, we'll support you, etc. And then it's like, hey, the reason why I can't grow this is you're not putting money behind this brand. You're not doing what I asked you to do.
That was not the case for me. That was not the case for me.
But you know what I'm saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I was actually crushing it. And I had so many people, like, because I was putting feelers out there and stuff. And so many people like, Jamie, what is wrong with you? You're crushing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just bored. It's too easy. I'm ADHD. I like a challenge and stuff. And so I was looking outside of Authority Brands, and then Authority Brands purchased Woofies, and I was like, you better put me on this brand.
And what is Woofies?
Yeah. Woofies is a mobile grooming, dog walking, pet sitting business, and it was awesome. And it is still awesome. I love that brand. I even have a tattoo of the logo on my leg.
Oh my gosh.
That's how much I love that brand. Yeah. Yeah.
But you love pets.
I just love pets. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
It was also a great brand concept, though, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the founders of the brand, the team, it was one of the first times I can say, like, holy cow, I found my people, you know, because I am obnoxious.
Low cost of entry or no?
Yeah, it wasn't terrible. The biggest cost with Woofies was the cost of a grooming van,
which ain't be cheap. Expensive.
No, it's
$80,000.
No, a little higher than that.
Damn.
But that's okay because of that. But they had multiple revenue streams. It was really exciting. It was fun, you know, as opposed to, you know, dealing with the end of life care.
Yeah.
It was during life care and with pet care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm back to end of life care.
Right. No, yeah, the very end now.
Now I'm at the very end of life care.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Still the pet care industry. So.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So Woofies and your prior brand this is all building. Well, obviously by this point you're an expert. You're an expert in finding leads. Well, all of it ties in, right? From the lead generation to the data to obviously the selling of franchises. But how does this all end up in the brand that you're with now? Okay, and I'm not talking about the specific circumstances of how you got there, but now you could probably go, not probably, you could go anywhere and sell it so long as you like the brand, right? So long as you like the business that's behind it.
The people.
Yeah. Why specifically this brand for you?
It got me super excited. You know, there's, I said this earlier, I hate it when people use the word disruptor.
Yeah.
We're a disruptor in the industry.
Yeah.
Bullshit, there's 50 competitors. Right. You're not disrupting anything.
Right. You sell pizza.
Right.
But this truly is. So when you think about, out of all the brands and industries out there, we started the podcast with this, is how many home care brands, how many this, how many that, how many that. There's, you can't, you barely anybody can say anything about
this. So a disruptor in this regard is what I call niche, right? I mean, it is an underserved market.
Very underserved.
And inevitable.
Yeah.
And inevitable.
Yeah.
It's Amazon resistant. It's recession resistant.
Right.
People aren't giving up their pets just because the
it's one of the last things that they'll stop spending money on, kids and pets.
Yep.
It's weird, right?
Yeah. And not only did you switch to a brand, you took a haircut.
Oh, I took a huge haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took a huge haircut. I was
but
offered.
You saw the end game.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's a really good point, Ricky. Like, I was being offered lots of, I even got a call the other day about a CEO position. I was like, I am not qualified for a CEO position. What in the world?
I'll take it.
I was, what's that salary? No, I didn't ask that. I did. I took a haircut from a financial perspective up front because I saw the overall end game and the opportunity there. And it's going to take a special person because we have no franchisees yet. We just have a corporate location.
Damn.
And we have an 8-page item 19, which is a 35.8% EBITDA. It's gorgeous. But and it is going to take a special.
You say 35% EBITDA, 35% off of gross revenue?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And so for the first half of 2023, they did 387,000, a little over 387 gross. So that's just shy of $139,000, right? So I saw the niche of it, that there's minimal to almost no competition.
Right.
And the profitability, the fact that it only takes 2 to 3 employees, that's one of the biggest things with Woofies, with Home Watch caregivers, even with Meineke was employees. Skill set, mm-hmm. like groomers and technicians, or even the volume of them.
But yeah. Why is Resting Rainbow different than another crematorium down the road? What are they doing different that separates them as a disruptor?
Well, number one, there's not another crematorium down
there
the road.
There is,
but they're mom and pops. They are highly mom and pops. That's a good question. The big part is they're focused on just B2B business, which is that veterinarian business.
Right.
And they're not focusing on any B2C.
But what's the big dirty secret in pet cremation?
The private cremation part of it. Yes, that's a good point. So most of the cremation that's happening out there, pet, they're doing communal. When you get your pet cremated, you're getting everybody's ashes, not just your dog's ashes. And they're actually, they're putting the smackdown on that. In the state of Florida, where Resting Rainbow is based out of, they shut down a ton of crematoriums because of that exactly.
It's false advertising, quite frankly.
Yeah, but like...
They're focusing on private cremation, private pet cremation.
Sure.
And so when a franchisee gets a cremator, they're going to start with a minimum of a 2-chamber cremator so they can do 2 pets at the same time so that they have this technology. So there's chambers, so they're making sure that those pet cremations are
separated. Yep.
Can you imagine you cremate your spouse? You get somebody else's spouse?
Jesus.
That ain't.
I'm sure that actually exists.
That ain't Margaret.
You know that's happened, especially these privates. I don't know where Sheila went last night. She went out for groceries.
How are you gonna know? How are you gonna know whose ashes you got? Right there, you go. Right.
Well, the good news is we have actually.
Oh, you don't
really
think cool it's
small enough? Program, but yeah.
You have what?
We have a tracking program. So they put this silver disc with a serial number in it into every pet's mouth. That gets processed through the whole process. Every step, it's scanned, etc. But
hey, Fido silver disc isn't in there.
No. But you know what? That you know the thing that everyone wants to talk about: what happens when the worst case scenario happens? Like, what happens if somebody does get the wrong ashes?
Right.
You know, or that people ask that question all the time with home watch care. What happens if the caregiver does do something wrong? What happens if this happens? What happens if you do screw up the brakes on the car?
Right.
Bottom line is, you own it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite questions when I was starting my GNC, my dad goes, what are you going to do if a customer buys a bottle of pills and it says 90 on it and they get home and count it and there's 88?
Yeah.
My first question is going to be like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. Hey.
And second, I'll give them their money back.
Hey, they sue over submarine sandwiches.
That's true.
Not being a full 12 inches.
That's true.
Right? Yeah.
Hot coffee.
All right, so this is what we're going to do. Yeah. So, Jamie, this has been fascinating. This is secret sauce kind of stuff. I want to bring you back when your franchise that you're with now is at 25. Let's shoot for 25 locations. Or 20. Yeah. No, let's not just shoot for 25 sold. Let's shoot for 25 locations. Because what you're going to learn between now and then, because this is tough stuff.
This is legit emerging brand information.
Franchise locations to 25. Yep. That's a big deal.
Yep.
And then we're going to pick your brain about totally different stuff, right? Is the growing pains from 0 to 25.
Right, exactly. Which is what happened with Woofies. In a year, we did 28 deals in 40-something locations within a year. So there's definitely some growing pains and learning examples there.
All right, awesome. So that's Jamie Levine, and this is Talking Risk. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
I knew it.